They play on our fears, our insecurities. Not only that, but they'll bribe anyone to do their dirty work for them, like this man. He was trying to spread their poison, trying to turn our wonderful and strong townspeople against each other. The elves are our allies. They serve nature and abhor the empire. Remember who you should truly hate. Otherwise, we will all die together. With that, she cut off her supply of mana and extinguished the fireball. The crowd settled down upon hearing her words, many nodding their heads in agreement. A few, however, stared daggers at Fiora before disappearing into the receding crowd. Fiora sighed as she realized she had more problems to deal with. "Good job," Leo complimented her after handing the injured elf over to his fellows. "This was an explosion scroll situation, and you defused it with as much grace as one would expect from a town hero, though perhaps executing that troublemaker wasn't the wisest decision. His relatives are sure to cause problems later." Fiora shook her head. "Perhaps, but it couldn't have been helped. The man was clearly a racist and would continue to cause trouble in the future. I executed him on the newly acquired authority gained from the Unity Army of Durin." Leo's eyes widened in surprise and pleasure. "I take it, then, that you will accept my invitation." Fiora flung her red hair over her shoulder and smirked. "Sure, why not? Especially if I can blame this mess on Albert. You men are going to need a strong woman's perspective, otherwise you'll charge headfirst into a hopeless situation." With a relieved sigh, Leo motioned for Fiora to follow him. He led her through the fading light to one of the newer buildings near the Adventurers Guild. A pair of guards were watching the door.
"Commander Leo, the meeting will be starting soon," one of them said respectfully.
He cast a cautious look toward Fiora.
"She is with me," Leo explained. "Fiora is a respected leader of the adventurers and is joining me to help bridge the gap between the adventurers and the army."
"Understood. She may proceed,"
the other guard declared. They opened the door for the duo, who entered without looking back. Fiora waited until the door closed behind them before speaking. "Why did you show those guards so much respect, even going so far as to explain yourself?"
"Those weren't normal guards," Leo whispered as he led her down the short corridor. "Those were some of Prince James's personal shadow guards in disguise. While I am not technically under their authority as a ranger, they can do anything they want so long as it pertains to the prince's safety. Now, I apologize, but I must ask that you remain silent until I introduce you to the other officers."
Fiora grimaced, but nodded in agreement. Leo opened the door, letting light flood into the passage.
"Ah, good," a happy voice came from the room. "Commander Leo, come in, come in. We were just about to start the meeting."
As her eyes adjusted to the more dimly lit interior, Fiora carefully examined the room and its occupants. In this large, round chamber, a massive table sat in the middle, covered in a map of the area. On it, various small figures were placed, some of humans and many of ugly demons. Surrounding the table were various important figures: King James, Alfred the advisor, Josh the leader of the King's Guard, Anna the spy mistress, Prince Ken, and a few other older men Fiora didn't recognize. Attendants and other higher-ranked soldiers were standing and sitting on the outskirts.
"Hey, Leo," one of them spoke up. "Why'd you bring a wench with you? Save those for after we win."
Fiora kept her anger under control as the room was filled with laughter.
"I would advise you to apologize, Commander Dicker," Leo said in reproach. "This is Fiora, the highest-ranked adventurer in town, and a warrior who has braved countless fights. She is worthy of respect, not slander."
Commander Dicker, the youngest-looking gray-bearded man at the table, scoffed and waved his hand dismissively.
"She's just another one of those stuck-up fools who think because they can fight a few slimes they're worth something. Please, Leo, don't bring trash like this into the war room."
Before either Leo or Fiora could react, Prince James actually took a step forward and slammed his fist down onto the table, startling everyone in the room. His face glowed in anger as he glared at the commander. "Commander Dicker," James said slowly, "while I respect your position and your views, I will not allow your blatant sexism and arrogance to insult both a hero and worthy advisor in my presence. Are you not aware of the countless dangers these adventurers have faced since this town came into being? They have fought..." "My prince, please calm yourself," Alfred urged from James's side in a low voice. "You cannot afford to offend the army leaders."
"I'm sorry, Alfred," James dismissed his advisor. "I value your counsel above all others, but I cannot allow this. I have conscripted the adventurers for the army in an effort to create a stronger fighting force, not to create disposable and discriminatory targets." Alfred frowned for just a moment before relaxing his face. He shared a quick glance with Josh and Anna, both of whom shook their heads.
"My prince, you are indeed the embodiment of Durin, the city where all are accepted," Alfred declared to the room. "To think you'd even give these lesser warriors a chance to prove their worth. The gods will surely bless you and your kingdom for this."
The room filled with resounding cheers, and everyone rejoiced. Only Fiora, Ken, Leo, James, and a few others frowned, but did nothing else. Truly, Fiora thought to herself, Alfred's tongue could charm the gods themselves. "Still, I suppose this is all I can expect from a bunch of meatheads with too much pride in their pants instead of their hearts."
"In any case," one of the generals continued after the cheers had died down, "what are we to do about the adventurers? Many are outright refusing to obey commands, and a few have come close to mutiny."
"General, this is the reason why I was late to the meeting. I would like to call forth Adventurer Fiora to say her piece," Leo announced. "Please, share with us your thoughts about what to do with the other adventurers."
Coughing, Fiora took a step forward from behind Leo. "Esteemed veterans," she called out, "I greet you. As some of you are aware, I am Fiora. I am a B-ranked adventurer who served as Bloody Mary's first apprentice. While I am not any kind of leader among the adventurers, I do believe I have some sway with them. For many, this conscription has come suddenly, and many are very unhappy."
"Those wimps just don't want to go to war," Commander Dicker sniffed in reproach. "They just need some motivation. Perhaps we should build a stock in town."
"Commander Dicker, I believe that is a terrible idea," Fiora said flatly. Everyone in the room instantly grew tense, and the air filled with trepidation. Commander Dicker's eye twitched. "You're right, in some ways," Fiora admitted. "We adventurers are very different from you soldiers. We do not fight for an ideal or a people. Instead, we fight for our survival and the promise of fortune and fame. Freedom is our virtue, and to suddenly take that from us is disheartening. However, instead of using punishments that would further divide this combined force, I advise that you use rewards instead." Another general frowned and tapped his fingers on the table.
"Are you saying we should treat you lot as mercenaries? That would defeat the purpose of conscripting adventurers in the first place."
"Do your soldiers fight without the promise for pay and food?" Fiora pointed out. "Many adventurers here have abilities who rely on them to bring home both. I have not yet heard a word about salaries, benefits, or the assurance that family will be paid if they die in battle." The general looked thoughtful as he continued to tap the table. "If you are conscripting every adventurer, would it not be best to use their unique abilities?" Fiora continued. "While we are not normally adept fighting on the battlefield, each and every one of us is skilled in the art of trapping, tracking, ambushes, and small skirmishes. We go to the places no one else will go, fighting to the last breath just for the promise of treasure. Sure, many call us thieves and plunderers because of this, but to us adventurers, we are explorers and discoverers.
Use us as such. We can find your enemy where they hide and eliminate targets of interest. I won't promise you that we can be made into a working army, but we are a force to be reckoned with regardless. When she was finished, Fiora took a step back and examined the reactions. For the most part, the few generals and commanders seemed to be considering her words. Only a few, like Dicker, were scoffing with disgust. Alfred whispered something into James's ear. James scratched his head and thought, as he seemed to be considering Alfred's words. Finally, he straightened up and knocked on the table several times to get everyone's attention. Adventurer Fiora's words ring true. I hereby announce that the adventurer shall have their own scouting division led by the Ranger Corps. Ranger Kenneth, do you accept this responsibility? Ken stood and bowed deeply.
I do, my prince. I shall endeavor to make proper use of the adventurers in order to maximize their strengths.
Leo and Fiora both smiled happily as well.
Good, James said. In that case, now that we have a proper scouting division, it is time to discuss their first mission. Alfred, if you would.
Bowing his head to the prince, Alfred stepped forward and began shifting figures on the map.
As you can see, he began, the demons and fleshlings controlled by the Empire's forces have been keeping a distance away from the dungeon town, but they have completely surrounded our forces. What few scouts and magic scrying that have succeeded in spying on the enemy have reported is that the Empire's forces are focusing on consolidating their position in preparation for the invasion of our neighboring countries. They believe it is impossible for us to break free of their siege, and they are correct. All we can do is hope Father Jonas was able to escape the blockade before it closed off his escape, and prepare for the eventual rescue from Allied forces. Since we do not know when they will rescue us or where they will come from, we must do all we can to survive in preparation for this escape. As such, our priority is to raid the former city of Durin.
Muted gasps and mutters began to circulate the room. Alfred held up his hand for silence.
I know many of you are asking why, and I will explain our reasoning. As I said earlier, we are working on the assumption that Father Jonas made it through the blockade. In order to preserve our country's identity while we are refugees, we'll need various important symbols of both our city and nation. To that end, we will be sending a raiding party to sweep through the ruins of the city of Durin to retrieve those symbols. Most important of all are the magic seals used to create Nahatran currency, located in the Treasury Building. To put it simply, if we have those seals, we'll be able to keep the value of our gold high and use them once the country is restored. Otherwise, we will be forced to rely on the currency of other countries.
The room was filled with hisses and grunts of disgust. To these soldiers, the very idea of relying on another country's generosity to rebuild was disgraceful and horrifying.
So, Alfred continued, thanks to Fiora's impressive speech, the adventurers have been folded into the Ranger Corps. The idea is that we send the Ranger Corps through the Elven Forest here to raid the city. Cutting through the forest will save 2 days of riding, and will help hide our forces from the enemy. Not only that, but after hearing of the amazing capabilities of adventurers, I think that they can do this without the need for moving our other troops.
Leo frowned at Alfred's proposal.
Advisor, how can you say this? Surely you can't expect just the Ranger Corps to accomplish this on our own. While we excel at speed, our forces would be destroyed if we were confronted by a strong army of demons. Can you not send a group of army mages with us?
Fiora caught Alfred hiding a ghost of a smirk as he shook his head with a forlorn expression.
I wish I could, Commander Leo, but our spy reports are quite clear. If you would, spy Mistress Annabelle.
Anna giggled and stepped up next to the table.
Sorry, Commander Leo, but my cute little babies tell me we'll soon be seeing small groups of demons attacking the town. Those icky monsters are best killed with magic. so we need all the magic users to protect the town.
Ken stood up now.
Brother, I mean, my prince, is this what you truly want my men to do? The city will be crawling with demons and fleshlings, not to mention the Empire's forces. Any detection on their part, and the entire core will be destroyed. If these treasures are so important, then we need the proper level of support and personnel.
Ken looked over at Fiora.
No offense meant towards you and your adventurers, Fiora, but few of you are capable of wielding sufficient magic to kill demons without targeting their summoners.
Fiora shook her head, for she knew he was correct. Most adventurer mages in town were best at attacking slimes, which lacked innate magical resistance for the most part. They were not familiar with the strengths and weaknesses of demons. While the army of Durin had trained to fight demons, it had lost many of its best mages to the fleshlings, who easily slaughtered the mages before they could counterattack. As a result, the army had precious few mages left.
What about this town? Fiora spoke up now. Adventurers are the source of wealth and security for this town, not to mention the many odd jobs we take to help the townspeople. Also, the beheading murderer is still here and hasn't been caught yet.
The Royal Guard is prepared to step in for the few days the adventurers are gone,
Josh responded evenly.
We'll oversee any security details you adventurers are normally responsible for. With any luck, we'll also catch the beheading murderer before you even return.
That won't be enough. What about bringing wealth from the dungeon? Fiora insisted.
Alfred smirked.
Have no fear, Fiora. I have already set a small division of soldiers to periodically obtain the wealth of the dungeon.
Fiora stared helplessly over at the prince. James began to tap his fingers on the table with a troubled look. After a moment's thought, he asked, Why don't we ask the church to send some of their temple knights?
Impossible, Your Majesty,
one of the generals answered.
We need trustworthy members of this kingdom for missions of this importance. Who would know if they received an order from their leaders to stop the mission from succeeding? Your Majesty, we cannot take that risk.
James shook his head sadly at Ken. Brother, I'm sorry, but I cannot risk sending our mages. The people are the hope of this country's future, and we need as many able defenders as possible. I had a long discussion with my advisors over this, and I agree that while we need the seal for our future, it isn't a large enough target to dispatch a large group. However, I have faith that the adventurers will be able to complete this mission with your rangers. With the prince's final word, Ken nodded his head and sat back down. Fiora sent a glowering look toward Alfred, who smiled innocently back at her. Unnoticed to anyone in the room, a ring on Annabelle's finger broke and disappeared. Chapter 10. Rowan shivered as he felt the cold wind blowing across his neck.
Brr, he shuddered. The wind is really starting to get chilly now.
Millie giggled and skipped next to Rowan.
You think this is cold? This is just the start of it. This country has really short springs and falls, but has very long winters and summers. Just wait for the snow to fall. You'll be crying for fur clothes.
Rowan eyed the cheerful Millie next to him.
So, how many snows have you gone through here before?
None, Millie admitted. This town started at the end of the last winter, and my father and I moved here during the spring. The city had some snow, but I stayed indoors most of the time.
Great, so you know as much as I do, Rowan sighed.
The two of them were on their way to the Adventurers Guild for their morning lessons. However, upon arriving at the guild, the two found the counters deprived of people, and the few adventurers present were too moody to talk to them. It was like a shadow hung over the entire building.
Children, over here!
Gannis called from the corridor. He beckoned them to follow him to the classroom and closed the door after they entered.
Master Gannis, is everything all right? Rowan asked.
Gannis shook his head.
It's nothing either of you can help with. However, we will be skipping meditation and theory today in favor of teaching you both a few magic professions. Also, you'll need to leave for home as soon as I'm done. The streets are becoming less safe.
Why? What's happened? Millie pressed.
Ganis sighed.
Children, there is nothing you can do now except listen and learn. Are you not interested in learning about what you can become after mastering the basics of magic?
He waited until the children stopped talking.
Now,
Ganis switched to his teaching voice.
What magic professions can you name?
Millie raised her hand.
I know of the alchemists, witches, enchanters, and mages. Those are the common magic users in town who visit the tavern.
Rowan nodded along with her answers.
Ganis nodded. Correct. Mages are the most common type of magic user, because they can use any type of magic. Many become mages initially, before they specialize in a single type of magic. For example, a mage who uses fire magic becomes a fire mage, and eventually specializes into a pyromancer. Alchemists, witches, and enchanters are advanced magical jobs, but some had their start as mages specializing in nature, dark, and earth magic. Here in the southern part of the continent, magic users are regarded highly and always treated with respect, regardless of experience level.
Rowan raised his hand.
Sir, does that mean the north is very different from us? I've never heard of this before.
Ganis chuckled.
Well, I don't find this surprising. It's a rather pointed topic. A few hundred years back, there was a split between the countries on the continent due to a single question. Because of this civil conflict, humans split between those who worshipped the gods, who moved south, and those who did not, who moved north. Without the concern over the views of the gods, the northern countries became more focused on magical technology, while we southern countries focused on improving our spellcraft. While the other races did not join the conflict, they did choose a side and allied to the group of humans they agreed with.
What was the question? Nellie asked.
Ganis grinned wryly before holding his hand out in front of him.
Are the gods the real source of mana and magic? This one question broke the unity of humanity. It's the reason why there exists so much tension between the clergy and the guilds, as the two organizations were traditionally on opposing sides of this conflict. Nowadays, however, there has been peace, enough that some of the greatest minds have worked together to form marvelous new things. The mage ranks are a good example. Which reminds me, what are the ranks a mage can achieve, Rowan?
Novice mage, adept mage, journeyman mage, master mage, grandmaster mage, magus, and saint,
Claire whispered in Rowan's head.
I knew that,
Rowan retorted inwardly as he repeated the list to Ganis.
Correct. However, how does one know what rank they are currently at?
Rowan and Millie exchanged a confused look.
Someone tells them they are? Millie ventured. They take a test given by more experienced magic users?
In a way, that is correct,
Master Ganis agreed.
In the old days, mages would be ranked according to their strongest spell and the amount of spells they could cast before running out of mana. However, you both remember the device Master Mary used to check your affinities, correct? About 70 years ago, the technomancers of the North, using magic theory created in the South, were able to create a device that measures the mana found within the body. The device can take the various attributes of the body and assign comparable numeric values to them. Your level of intelligence, or strengths, are both good examples. The machine can also name the professional path the individual has embarked on, and can even give recommendations on what the individual has to do to advance to the next level.
That's incredible, Rowan gasped. I have never heard of such a wondrous device. Can we use it?
Ganis cleared his throat.
Unfortunately, no.
Why not? Millie asked grumpily.
The easy answer, Ganis sighed, is that the machine is incredibly expensive and fragile once set up.
After 70 years of constant work, the creators have only managed to lessen the size of the device from a house to half of a room. Creating one requires various rare materials, like a dungeon heart crystal. This country has only been able to afford the smaller devices that can just read magic affinity, though only large organizations like the Adventurers Guild can afford it. Rowan twitched as he felt Doc's panicked feelings ring through his head.
So, would our dungeon be targeted for such a thing?
I won't bore you with the specifics, but that would not happen, Gannis confirmed. Besides, we are trapped here. Back to what I was saying before, your choice of study determines your profession. The main part of today's lesson is to teach you about enemy mages you will likely face in the days to come. From first-hand experience, the enemy has warlocks, witches, and elemental-focused mages. You both know about the last two, so I won't talk about them. Warlocks will be your biggest concern, he continued. They use a branch of summoning magic, under the school of control magic. They specialize in the use of demons from alternate planes of existence. The stronger the warlock, the more or stronger demons they can summon. Warlocks by themselves are not very scary. Without their magic, they can be killed like any normal human. However, warlocks have an innate skill that allows them the ability to fuse with one of their summoned demons at the cost of their soul. As you have probably guessed, warlocks are not allowed into the three heavens and normally turn into demons themselves when they die. From what you know, what kind of demons do you think warlocks turn into?
Demons of sin, like greed or wrath, Rowan guessed.
Correct. Animal or monster demon creatures are natural beings in the hells, like our world's monsters and animals. Native demons are divided into tribes and are all referred to as commanders, with their power levels broken into ranks. Sin demons are the only demons that exist from fallen persons of the mortal races, not just humans. Sin demons are normally broken into 7 categories: greed, gluttony, pride, lust, wrath, sloth, and envy. There are a few other categories, but thankfully those are rarer, as every one of these demons are incredibly powerful, like melancholy, ignorance, fear, and doubt. What is the type of demon that is not a true demon?
Corruption, Millie and Rowan said together.
Yes. Corruption demons are not true demons and are hated by every type. I will not make you memorize every type of demon. There are too many. But today's homework is to learn about the general abilities about the 7 sin demons. I want to hear from both of you their strengths, powers, and weaknesses, because the warlocks that fuse with them will have the same abilities. Now, the typical warlock will cast...
That was so long, Rowan complained, as the two of them left the Adventurers Guild. Who knew learning about just one magic profession would be so complicated? I fear we'll have to do this all over again when we learn what jobs suit us.
Millie giggled. Don't we both already know what we are going to be? You're going to be a necromancer, and I'm going to be some kind of priest thing.
I don't think there is any such thing as a priest thing job, Rowan scoffed at her.
You know what I mean, Millie rolled her eyes. It's not like I can announce it on the streets.
Well, it's not like anyone is listening. In fact, where is everyone? It should be the lunch rush, but the streets are empty.
Millie cocked her head and raised a hand to her ear. I hear something over toward the noble quarter. Sounds like a lot of people, I think.
Well, we got out early today. Let's go check on what's going on before heading back to the tavern, Rowan suggested.
Good idea.
The two hurried along the streets toward the noble district gate. It was surrounded by angry townsfolk, many of whom were recognizable to Rowan and Millie. The new guards from Durin were doing their best to hold the people back, but they were struggling against the mob.
Wow, everyone seems to be really upset.
Millie raised her hand to her forehead to shield her eyes from the sun.
Funny, I don't see any of the refugees in this crowd.
Must be a local problem, then. We'd better ask someone what's going on.
Millie stared around until she caught sight of people she was familiar with.
Hey, uncles! She shouted and waved. Mr. Henry, over here!
Millie led Rowan over to three normal customers of the tavern, Henry, Johan, and Hamish. The three men relaxed at the sight of the friendly Millie and smiled at her.
If it ain't the little mistress of the tavern, what are you doing here?
Hamish chuckled. Millie giggled cutely, causing Rowan to roll his eyes in the background.
We were on our way home from school when we heard all this noise. Mr. Hamish, what's going on?
At her question, the three men grimaced and spat on the ground as a group.
Oh, pardon our manners, miss, Henry apologized. It's just that this situation leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Johan nodded in agreement.
It's the blasted army,
Hamish growled.
They went and conscripted all the adventurers and sent them off on some secret mission. Complete hogwash and blasphemy, I tell you. This town lives off the adventurers, and now they're all gone. Who's supposed to dive into the dungeon and do the odd jobs around the town now? Sure as heck ain't the soldiers. They're too busy guarding and the like. Everyone here either relies on adventurers or cares for one, and we want answers.
Millie and Rowan exchanged a look of shock. For the first time ever, the town held no adventurers. Rowan shuddered as he imagined Doc's reaction to the news.
Daddy's gonna have no customers, Millie said in horror.
The three miners nodded.
You're right, little miss, Henry said in affirmation. We miners can't mine without the protection of the adventurers. Can't risk finding a noose. We'll be saving our money until we find more construction work. Everyone else will be doing the same, though, so we won't be eating at the tavern for a time.
That, I'll let Daddy know, Millie said sadly.
The three men said their goodbyes and rejoined the yelling mob. Millie and Rowan walked back into the streets toward Tent City.
Why would the army send every adventurer away at a time like this?
Rowan wondered aloud.
It just doesn't make any sense. Adventurers are the lifeblood of this town. They do all the jobs we need. Not only that, but they guard the town. What could be so important?
Millie punched a wall in frustration.
Yeah, my father and I have worked hard to run the tavern, but we won't be able to stay open if all the adventurers are gone. We still have debts to pay off.
My adventurers! No!
Doc screamed in Rowan's mind, causing him to wince and clutch his head in pain.
You all right, Rowan?
Millie asked quickly, turning to check on him. Rowan winced.
Yeah, just a little temper tantrum in my head. Nothing bad.
Millie took a quick look around to make sure no one was nearby.
Is it your friend? She whispered quietly. Is it mad about the adventurers being gone?
Rowan twitched violently at another scream in his head before grimacing.
Oh, yeah, it's mad all right. The shock of having no adventurers is really hitting it hard.
Hitting who hard?
The sudden question scared Millie and Rowan into jumping in fright.
Sorry for scaring you, Millie, Rolf apologized from the alley entrance, Danny following close behind. I didn't mean to cause any alarm.
Oh, no trouble, Rolf.
Millie waved him off, her mind moving quickly to cover up what Rowan had been saying.
We were just talking about the current state of affairs with the adventurers gone. I was afraid you were a guard, overhearing our less than polite words.
Rolf shook his head with a sigh.
I doubt most guards would say anything to you, even if they had heard you. This entire situation is most unusual, even to the nobility. The generals and prince's retinue have even avoided answering my father's questions.
Is your father someone important?
Rowan asked curiously, temporarily forgetting his animosity towards Rolf.
Now that I think about it, you've never mentioned your family before.
Look and be amazed, commoner, Danny announced with a flourish of his hands. You look upon the son of Lord Grecian, head of the Merchants Guild. Look upon him with awe, and...
All right, that's enough, Rolf interrupted awkwardly,
as he noticed Millie and Rowan staring at him strangely. My father was a merchant made honorary noble thanks to some past deeds. However, he had hit his peak in Durin and came here to grow his company. Due to the tragedy, he was unanimously elected to head the surviving merchants as guildmaster.
So, you are not a real noble, Rowan pointed out.
Rolf laughed and stuck his chest out in pride. Do not compare me to some typical noble brat who only knows the power his family has given him. I am noble in spirit and will seize the opportunity to become noble by my own hands.
But you're still a commoner now, right?
Rowan grinned cheekily. Brat, how do you wish to be hit?
Rolf growled out, a small light covering his fist. Come at me, merchant boy,
Rowan snarled back, a tiny trace of black mana gathering in his palm. Enough! Millie's hand blurred as she held up a throwing knife to each of their throats, making the two boys gulp audibly. Millie frowned at the two of them.
While I normally enjoy watching your banter, this isn't the time for violence. Now, I know you both have a great deal of pride, but I want you two to shake hands right now and forget about your rivalry. If the demons invade while the adventurers are gone, you both need to be healthy to fight. Now shake, she ordered.
Reluctantly, Rolf and Rowan released their spells and grudgingly shook the other's hand under Millie's watchful eye. They each tried to squeeze the hand of the other, with Rowan's 11-year-old hand unable to do anything to Rolf's 16-year-old hand. Rowan grimaced as Rolf smiled evilly. Millie whacked Rolf on the head.
All right, that's enough. Rowan doesn't have your knight's training after all.
Yes, milady, Rolf bowed in response. Your magnanimousness toward everyone, even if they are undeserving of it, is astounding as always. Millie blushed and giggled to Rowan's annoyance, though he wasn't quite sure why he was annoyed. Danny cleared his throat and pressed something into Rolf's hand. Surprised, Rolf looked down and suddenly remembered why he was there.
Ah, excuse my forgetfulness, but I actually came here to deliver a message from the church, Rolf explained. One of the priests there is a friend of my father, and he asked me to request for you to visit him sometime within the week. He didn't say why, only that your teacher had spoken to him about it.
Which priest? Millie asked, sharing a quick glance with Rowan.
Priest Horace. That's all I know. So if Milady will excuse me.
He bowed and walked away, Danny following behind him. Rowan scoffed once the duo had disappeared.
What's Danny's purpose, anyway? All he seems to do is praise that arrogant lout. He isn't even a real noble. He's been lying this whole time.
Millie pursed her lips and gave Rowan a sideways look.
But aren't you the same? A prince of a fallen country isn't really a prince, now is he? At least Rolf has the aspirations to become a noble.
Rowan felt his anger rising at her words.
Oh, so you're on his side now. Did he weasel you over with his compliments and fancy talk? Do you think I'm so easily moved, Rowan?
Millie shook her head.
If that is really what you think of me, then I'm disappointed.
She turned her back on him and began to leave the alley. Feeling regretful, Rowan hurried after her.
Millie, I didn't mean it. Wait up.
Seeing Millie turn her head to face him, Rowan felt a small bit of relief.
I'm really sorry about what I said, Millie. I didn't mean... Millie, what are you looking at?
Millie stared at something behind Rowan, her mouth open in shock. Her finger shakily rose and pointed over Rowan's shoulder. Rowan turned his head, confused, before also freezing in place. Hovering in the air in front of the two children, a figure wearing a purple petal dress grinned cheekily.
So, no more adventurers, right? Claire said with a bit of glee. That means we can finally begin the investigation. Rowan, come on. We have a murderer to find.
Chapter 11.
Claire!
Rowan screeched in alarm. He jumped over and threw the bag tied to his side over her, trying in vain to hide her.
Millie just continued to stare with an open mouth.
"Rowan, stop it!"
Claire cried out, struggling to break free of the bag.
"Hey, let me out! This is an order!"
"Do you have any idea how angry Master Doc is going to be when he realizes you showed yourself here?"
Rowan whispered worryingly to her as he ignored her.
"He is going to kill someone and not using his normal methods. I do not want slimes invading this town."
"It'll be fine," Claire protested. "Rowan, as your newly adopted maternal figure, believe me when I say that this is fine. Now let me out."
"Who's my new mother?"
Rowan refuted harshly.
"I doubt any mother would be so dumb as to put her life in danger just for some fun."
"Rowan,"
Millie stammered.
"What? Who is that?"
Rowan froze as he remembered Millie's presence. Claire took advantage of his realization and quickly escaped the bag, flying over to Millie's face. Millie's eyes focused on the little pixie in front of her.
"So you're Millie," Claire grinned. "Nice to meet you. I'm Claire the Dungeon Pixie. Rowan's shown me a lot about you."
"Dungeon Pixie?"
Millie muttered. She gasped and brightened.
"Oh, so you're Claire. Rowan told me about you."
"Really?"
Claire frowned and looked back at Rowan, who shrugged.
"I don't remember either," he confessed. "But she claims I told her about our relationship some time ago."
Claire pondered with her finger on her lip.
"I don't have any recollection either. That's odd."
Millie leapt forward, taking the two others by surprise, and wrapped her arms around Claire in a hug.
"Oh, my goodness, you're so cute and adorable. That dress goes so beautifully with your skin and hair. I'm so jealous. I can't wear anything cute or pretty here in town because they'd get dirty."
Claire escaped Millie's assault and posed happily in the air.
"You think I look cute? Thank you so much. I haven't been so honestly complimented in such a long time. I forgot how it felt."
"Me too. I mean, it's nice and all to be treated like a child, but no one ever means it when they compliment your looks. I want to feel pretty and girly sometimes."
The two girls shared a hug and began to sob. Rowan facepalmed and groaned before casting a spell. With a wave of his wand, the two ends of the alley were blocked by an illusion of crates.
"Phew, good thing Master Gannis has been teaching us some basic spells. Otherwise, this would be a very short-lived reunion,"
Rowan muttered. He looked over at the two girls, wrapped up in the throes of new friendship, and concentrated.
"Doc, have you calmed down?"
Rowan sent through the mental bond. He heard a loud sob, followed by an affirmative.
"Right. Do you know where Claire is?"
Rowan asked.
"Claire? She was right with me. Huh? Where'd she go?"
Rowan heard Doc's wondering voice.
"Well, she's here with me, in town, in front of my friend, and talking with her,"
Rowan admitted sheepishly. There was an odd pause.
"Keep her safe,"
was all that Doc said.
"Huh? I thought you were going to have a panic attack like you usually do. You feel okay, Master Doc?"
Rowan asked in concern. He heard a long sigh from the dungeon.
"As much as I hate the idea of Claire being in danger, we have bigger problems, Rowan. Claire's always told me that adventurers are the most dangerous things. So, if all the adventurers are gone, then the town is completely safe. Well, mostly, anyway. She explained it to me before she left, something about how birds would be her biggest threat."
Rowan thought of the many soldiers, merchants, priests, and other dangers in town.
"Right, then. As long as you're okay with it."
Rowan whistled internally, deciding to leave the issue alone.
"Yep, if there is no danger, she can have all the fun she wants. Besides,"
Doc grew oddly serious,
"you and she need to use this time to find out who's been killing my prey and blaming it on me. I hate not knowing. Since your friend knows about us, use her too. Or eat her. Whatever works best. Just figure out the culprit and do something bad to it. By the way,
How are Claire and your friend doing? Are they getting along?
Rowan turned his attention back to the two girls, who were now giggling and whispering.
Kill any girl who tries to steal. I know the feeling. But what about instead? No, not painful enough. I'd rather... I knew you'd be the same as me, but you need to remember.
Right, thieves trying to take what's mine deserve.
The two shared a horrible giggle that sent shivers up Rowan's spine.
I think they're getting along. I can't hear what they're talking about too well, though, he reported.
Just take care of Claire, search for the culprit, and find me some interesting materials to use as slime evolution catalysts, Doc ordered. Meanwhile, I'm going to have to start conserving my mana. Without any adventurers to replenish my stockpile, Claire told me I'll start to lose my abilities and floors. I'll have to suspend the mental connection temporarily, too, so only call me if it's an emergency. Good luck!
Rowan sighed in comfort as he felt the persistent mental bond with the dungeon relax. He took a moment to appreciate the freedom he hadn't felt since he'd awoken after his centuries-long sleep.
Claire, did Master Doc really need to stop communicating to save mana?
Rowan asked the little pixie.
Claire giggled. Well, as one of his innate abilities, telepathy does use mana, just not that much. I just wanted a break from talking to him. You too, right? Well, I can't say it isn't welcome,
Rowan admitted.
But you really lied to Doc today about a lot of things. This town is still really dangerous for you to be here.
True,
Claire admitted with her arms crossed.
However, after Doc's tantrum yesterday over the murderer, I felt that this opportunity couldn't be missed to thoroughly explore the town to find the culprit. Also, I didn't outright lie to him, because I happened to be strong enough to protect myself.
Murderer?
Millie asked curiously.
Do you mean the beheading murderer?
Yeah, he's been a big topic of discussion at the tavern.
Random men and women found dead and missing their heads, their necks melted away. A few adventurers said they'd come across slimes in the dungeon that attacked the same way.
That doesn't make any sense, Claire protested. Doc slimes only go for the head when falling from an aerial trap. There aren't any traps in town, nor any active slimes.
How about inactive slimes? Millie suggested.
Claire and Rowan shared a quick look before shaking their heads.
No, Doc would never risk himself by creating slimes outside the dungeon. I taught him too well for him to be that dumb. Like my mommy once told me, you can lie to me about not eating the cookies, but you have crumbs all over your face.
Millie and Rowan stifled their laughter, as Claire was nodding her head in complete seriousness.
So, she continued, all we need to do is find the crumbs of the culprit. Now, to the crime scene. Claire, if you want to go, then you'll need to hide in my pocket,
Rowan said seriously.
We can't afford to let others know of your existence.
No,
Claire disagreed.
Here, Claire, hide in mine.
Millie pulled her pocket open.
I have more room, and it smells nicer.
Okay,
Claire said cheerfully, and dived into the shirt pocket. Rowan grumbled for a moment as he dispelled the illusion on the alley.
All right, I think the newest crime scene is near the Tent City Gate in Irontown. Follow me,
Rowan muttered, leading the two girls down the street.
I know I've been watching everything through his eyes, but he really is grumpy, isn't he?
Claire wondered out loud.
Millie nodded sagely.
Yup, his two normal moods are either prideful or grumpy. If he's smiling, then something bad happened to someone else. Those types are sad, aren't they?
Claire sighed.
So pitiful in their loneliness. I can hear both of you, you know,
Rowan gritted his teeth.
And, Claire, stop talking out loud. Use your telepathy.
We know,
the girls chorused, with Claire speaking in Millie and Rowan's minds. Groaning, Rowan led the girls through the town toward the Tent City Gate. The mob at the Noble District Gate was large enough that the three met very few people on their way.
This is close enough, Rowan announced as he stopped at an alley entrance. The latest victim was a farmer's wife, I believe.
Millie, how did the adventurers describe the scene again? No head and surrounded by vegetables, Millie announced. Her body was buried near the mass grave next to the undead dungeon ruins.
For some reason, I feel like making a mass grave next to the ruins of an undead dungeon is a bad idea,
Rowan complained.
Isn't that just asking for trouble?
It is, but that's not important right now, Claire declared. Now it's time to find some crumbs.
Rowan cast his illusion spell on the alley, and Claire flew out of Millie's pocket.
Now, since you two have been learning mortal magic, allow me to show you some fey magic, Claire said gleefully.
Floating parallel with Rowan's head, Claire slowly drifted down the alley with her arms in front of her, her hands wrapped around the air. Slowly, a ball of purple light began to form between her palms, which she manipulated by rotating her hands around. A small breeze began to whisper through the alley, a dim purple light illuminating the walls and ground.
Blessings of the earth, Claire muttered,
and she released the ball of purple light. It fell and was absorbed by the soil. A pulse of energy shot through the alley, covering every surface. Slowly, the purple glow of a headless body appeared on the ground, surrounded by spilled food.
Wow! Millie exclaimed in wonder. I've never seen or heard of this type of magic before. Miss Claire, you are amazing!
I agree, Rowan said in amazement. How are you doing this?
Claire grinned cheekily.
Oh, when I told you about what my mommy said earlier, I bet you thought I had actual crumbs on my face, didn't you? Sillies, she just cast this spell and revealed the ghost of my sins. That is what the spell is called, by the way, Ghost of Past Sins. It's a very high-level necromancer spell to you humans, but it's one of my family's blood abilities. I've actually added my own special twist, using the earth magic my daddy taught me to use the memories of the soil to project what happened.
To illustrate, Claire waved her hand, and the purple images slowly started to move in reverse. Slowly, the food and other goods floated into the air toward a purple basket, and the body arose into a very odd posture. Rowan frowned.
The way her hands are moving, it looks like she's trying to get something off her face, but why can't we see what attacked her?
The attacker isn't appearing in the memories of the soil, Claire explained, which likely means it never touched the ground in this alley.
Well, what about when the attacker was finished? Millie asked. It should have at least touched some surface after the body fell.
Claire grimaced.
I'd have to restart the spell, and that might drain me of too much mana to cast any more magic. Just keep an eye out for the start of the attack.
Claire, you're sweating,
Rowan cautioned.
Just a little effort to keep this spell going, but don't worry about me. Concentrate on finding the attacker, Claire groaned.
Millie and Rowan watched carefully as the victim's hands continued to struggle with the invisible attacker. Suddenly, the hands began to drop down.
Hurry, the spell will end soon, Claire cautioned.
Rowan and Millie turned their heads left and right as they looked for any additional purple outline that could give them a hint of the attacker's identity.
Look, Millie said suddenly.
She pointed at the top of the roof on the right. There, a round figure was slightly poking over the edge.
Can't,
Claire gasped, her hands dropping to her side. The magic disappeared and left the alley in shadow once again. Rowan caught Claire as she fell. Claire grinned sadly.
Wow, I haven't cast a spell of this size in some time. I'm out of practice. Mommy would be really mad if she found out how bad I've gotten.
You did really good, Miss Claire,
Millie complimented from the side.
Please, just call me Claire. Miss makes me sound old.
She turned her head to Rowan.
Did you figure out who the murderer was? It could have been a slime, but it also could have been a head. I didn't make it out very well.
Rowan shook his head.
Whatever it is, the attacker seems to have leapt off the roof onto the heads of its victims. Judging by how she struggled, I don't think the attacker was very big, about the size of her head.
It must be a slime, then, Claire grimaced. It's the only thing that would fill both criteria, round and the size of a human head. This is really not good.
Why? Millie asked curiously.
We know the attacker now, so let's go get it.
Claire and Rowan shared a worried look.
Millie, Claire said evenly, every slime in the dungeon is created, used, and controlled by Doc, the dungeon. If there is a slime out here killing people, then...
It might be Doc doing it, Rowan finished. After all, he has been complaining about the lower numbers of adventurers in the dungeon. It might be possible he just got hungry and acted wrongly.
The worst possibility is that he's corrupted, Claire continued. That would mean this entire town is on the verge of being turned into slime spawning ground.
Maybe it isn't your dungeon at all, Millie reasoned. It's not like real slimes don't live in the forest. Maybe the demons forced them to change hunting grounds.
Your spell didn't show what color the slime was.
But it acted intelligent, Rowan argued. Wild slimes are idiots in every way.
Millie might have a point, Claire considered. After all, wild slimes are perfectly capable of learning how best to hunt prey. They just have to live long enough to gain experience. Which would mean a very old, cunning slime is working this town.
That really isn't any better than Doc being the bad guy.
Really? I feel like a rogue dungeon is the worst that can happen here, Millie argued.
Claire shook her head.
No, because an old slime feeding this frequently means it's close to reproducing. And slimes reproduce by splitting themselves into multiple new slimes, each with the same level of experience as the parent.
So, Rowan said grimly, either way, this town is looking to be covered in slimes unless we find the culprit and kill it. That's not even considering the multitude of demons waiting to invade the town.
Just another day in the dungeon town, Millie sighed. All right. Let's go home and give Father the bad news about the adventurers. Goddess knows he'll be mad enough about that.
Chapter 12 Fiora checked her saddle once again, verifying it still held her rations and tent. Rubbing her head, she couldn't help but let out a mournful sigh.
Goddess, is this truly the right thing to do? She mumbled to the wind.
A hand clapped down on her right shoulder, startling Fiora. She grabbed the arm and bent forward to flip the person touching her.
Wait, wait, wait!
But it was too late, as Fiora sent Jonas crashing down onto his butt. Fiora blinked awkwardly as she watched Jonas curl into a ball, groaning as he rubbed his sore backside. She heard raunchy laughter coming from the other adventurers behind her, especially Nat. Blushing in embarrassment, Fiora reached down to help Jonas up.
Sorry, Jonas. You startled me, she explained quickly.
Jonas gave her a sheepish grin.
Yeah, I kind of picked that up. That'll teach me to be more careful, right?
That's for sure, Nat joked as she slid over beside Jonas. That'll be the best outcome for touching other ladies without my permission.
Oh, honey, does that mean you're going to give me permission someday?
Jonas asked excitedly.
Nat snorted. Huh, in your dreams, lover boy, you're mine and mine alone.
Fiora rolled her eyes as the two shared a cheesy kiss.
All right, we get it. You two are in love. Stop rubbing it in to the many lonely men behind me.
Every adventurer who heard Fiora began to loudly boo at the couple, and a few took to throwing dirty things like socks at them. The couple bid a hasty goodbye to Fiora and ran away from the crowd. Fiora couldn't help but chuckle as she returned her attention to her saddle.
I would believe that the contents of your saddlebags have not changed since the fifth time you checked them, Gran observed, approaching her. Perhaps your time would be better spent trying to relax. You humans are known to be quite difficult when stressed.
Difficult, huh? I suppose that's the polite way of saying it.
Fiora winked at her old friend.
Honestly, this whole mission makes me uncomfortable and stressed.
As it should, Gran nodded. After all, you have been conscripted into an army you did not serve, sent on a mission many believe is suicidal, and all of this has been arranged by the prince and